Everybody ready? Come on, let's go.
The Rick Flair Show! Let's go! The Rick Flair Show! Let's go!
Hey, yo, what's up? This is Rick Thorne. Welcome to my show. On this episode, I got a good friend of mine, Jose Mangan. He is the host of SiriusXM's Liquid Metal and Octane. He is the ultimate metal ambassador. He's also an actor. We're going to be starring in a new TV series together called Run Boys. I'm going to call him right now. Let's do this.
Hello?
Yo, what up, dude? This is Thorne.
Yeah, brother Rick, man, what's going on, dude?
Did I just wake you up, dude?
No, I'm just trying to attack my emails and trying to get a bunch of shit done, man. So, hey, let me put my earphones in. All right, hold on.
Yeah, no worries.
Yo, checking the microphone. Yeah.
Yeah, you're making me nervous because you're actually like a pro radio host, and I'm just kind of like trying to be one. You know what I mean?
Shut up, dude. You are one. You don't need to. Dude, listen, man, back in the day, this dude that used to work with us, a consultant for SiriusXM, would always say, it's not about the experience, the FM resumes or whatever for hosts. It's about, can they entertain a room of people? Can they be compelling? Can they be someone that walks into a bar by themselves, you know, and 30 minutes later, they've got five people around them, an hour in, there's 15 people around this person, and they're leading the conversation, leading it, making sure everyone's cool and into it, and telling stories. That's the host that you want to hire, they would always tell me. It's not the person that sends you a resume with 15 fucking radio station call letters. It's, can the person fucking talk?
Yeah.
Can he entertain? You know what I mean? That was like one of the things, and I always thought that was such a good example. He would say, because we worked in New York City for a long time, and he would say, the guy that sells hot dogs outside, that dude is a better radio host than a lot of people you guys have on your stations now. And but because he's like, he's entertaining. He's got a voice. He's like, hey, hot dogs, hey, what do you got? And then he's quick.
But then he's also, you know, like, if you don't buy the hot dog, he's like, get the fuck out of here. Next, this fucking guy. Eh.
Yeah, he's authentic. He's real. He's entertaining. You know, someone could just stand there and be like, I'm going to watch this guy talk all day. That is the type of host you want. And you are like that, my friend. That is describing you, Rick Thorne.
Well, we both are.
That's a really cool way.
Thanks, dude. Thanks for that. You know what? I will say this. Yeah. Just give me a little bit of credibility for radio. When X Games shit came out, I was, you know, in the beginning, we had all these opportunities. And I did radio for ESPN for like 9 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we were in that. Do you know ABC Radio? It was like a Disney building.
Yeah. Of course, man. I know all this. This is my life, bro.
I know. You know everything. Dude, you are the man, dude. I'm so stoked. Dude, what about Run Boys, this new project we're doing? How stoked are you?
Oh, my God. Dude, Rick, first of all, thank you so much for getting me involved with this. It is something that I've always wanted to do. When you called me up, and first you texted me, and you were like, hey, I got this cool opportunity. You know, let's talk. And then we started talking on the phone, and you were telling me about it. And I just thought, man, I would love to be a part of this. And it was you, dude. You made that connection happen, and I'm very, very, very grateful. And then, you know, the directors, when you mentioned me to them, they knew me from back in the day when I played their metal band on the radio, Mantis. So it all just fucking came back to metal again, which is fucking awesome how metal has led me to all these different opportunities and stuff that I haven't even fucking tried to pursue, but I want to, you know, and thank you, dude, for getting me involved. I love the storyline. I love the people, the crew, the actors, everybody involved with that show.
Yeah.
It's really cool. So well, thank you, Rick, for bringing me in.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the listeners, it's new, so no one knows of it yet, but this is a badass TV show, TV series that we've been filming called Run Boys. Any of the listeners out there, It's a very, I don't want to give too much of it away, but it's, what would you say? It's a, it's on the dark side of things in the IE and the Inland Empire.
Yeah, and you know? it's a drug show. It's a fucking, and I play a crooked detective who makes money from the drug bosses on the side, and I got my detective salary, and my name is Detective Cross, and you play the role of Pigeon.
Yep.
And you do such a great job. Dude, when I was watching you do your thing on a screen separate from where you were filming, but with the director, Clint and Jeremy, and I was just seeing you do your thing. Dude, you're such a natural. And you know what was really cool? I was just quiet watching you, but to hear other people comment about you, it fucking made me proud, and it made me smile, because people were like, oh, he's fucking really good. And then somebody else would say, oh, man, you know, he's done acting before. He's a fucking pro. And then somebody else saying something else cool about you. And I was like, man, fucking look at Rick right there, dude, doing the thing, just feeling very comfortable. Your sounds, your facial expressions, your movements, it's all very real and very cool for the role you're playing. And it was cool to not just have me think these things, but to hear others say shit about you as I was just a fly on the wall there. Very cool, man.
No, dude, thanks. And they were saying the same things about you. The vibe has been amazing. Like, no, for real, dude. You've never. Right. Well, so this is your first acting gig.
Yeah, first real, because I played myself in a bunch of things. Like I was in Paradise City, which was a pretty popular series that was on Amazon Prime, and now it's everywhere. But that was I was in a few episodes, but I played myself.
Right.
So you know, I had lines and stuff like that. So, but it was myself, and I do that all the time, man. I like fucking doing something else, being somebody else. But Rick, let me tell you something that's really, really crazy and so embarrassing. And you know this, but I'll share it with
what is it?
With your with the fans here. When I walked into the first day of shooting in a Burbank studio, I have my suitcase, my Metallica suitcase, and my new suit that I bought for the role. And I'm walking in, and I meet the director, you know, for the first time. And then I meet the other detective that's my partner. And I walk up. This is like in 10 seconds of walking into the studio in Burbank. I'm like, hey, what's up, Detective Cross? And he's like, you're Detective Cross. I'm Detective Chamberlain. I'm like, and I said, no. I'm Chamberlain. You're Cross. What's up, dude? Nice to meet you. And he was like, no, Jose, are you serious? And I was like, and I just met this actor. And I was like, I memorized Chamberlain's parts, because that's what Jeremy told me that I was. And he was like, no. And then Jeremy came by with a concerned look in his face. And he was just like, what's up? And then we both said, who are we? Like, who am I? And then Jeremy said, you're Detective Cross. And my fucking stomach sank. I got so nervous and fucking started to panic, because I memorized for 5 days all of Detective Chamberlain's lines. So I didn't even, I barely looked at Detective Cross's lines, because I just focused on my shit. But I was wrong, dude. And I memorized the wrong part. So my very first fucking time on a set, acting for real, I fucking had the wrong fucking guy. And it was so, I had it so confidently down that it made me so nervous. But then they quickly saw how kind of panicked I got.
Right.
You know, because this is not, I'm out of my element, and now I'm freaking out. And then Jeremy said, the director was like, no. You got, there's some time. We're still doing these other parts. You know, we still got to get your makeup and wardrobe and whatever. So go to this room, work it out, keep some lines that you like the most, and then learn the other ones. And so Jackson was the other actor. We went into a room, and for like a couple hours, we went through our lines, and I was able to keep a couple of my favorites, and I had to learn some other ones. And there was this one big chunky paragraph that when I looked at it initially, I was like, oh, man, the other detective's got a big paragraph right there. So, but that was my fucking paragraph. So That's the one that I had to like, oh shit, I walked away, I was going up and down the hallway just trying to memorize and make it feel like I really, really knew it, this one line. So yeah, man, it was a challenge, but it was such a great experience, man. But I think that's such an embarrassing story, man. But you know, I am a big stoner, and I didn't really look at the fucking text very carefully. I kind of just looked at it quick, and I saw Chamberlain's word, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm Chamberlain.
That's so
but
funny.
That's not what happened. Oh god, it was so embarrassing.
But you pulled it off. So yeah, it was like your first acting gig where you're not playing yourself, and you're like, dude, I don't know, I got to relearn all these lines. What the hell? But you pulled it off. You pulled it off.
Yeah, and I like challenges, dude. I love pressure. You know, in a fucking weird way, I love that pressure. It's just doing radio 12 hours a day. You know, doing interviews like all the time. Like there's always this kind of pressure that I sort of live off of, and I'm a procrastinator. So I turn in shit at the last minute. I'm fucking, that's how I always was in high school and college and graduate school. Like I was just fucking that way. And
right.
I'm still the same. Fuck, I'm 44 and now I'm still the same procrastinator. But I think I like that pressure, dude. I think I like working under the gun like that, and when I had to learn new lines right before we started the film, you know, I just took it as, okay, how do you get past this? How do you fucking kick ass? How do you know? And just it turned to being more positive and more trying to, you know, find that confidence. But that's a cool thing in life, though, right? I mean, it's the same shit that happens with so many of us. We have these obstacles, and it's how we overcome them. And that's how we fucking, that's what defines our life.
Absolutely. You know, when you said something about pressure, I could agree with you the same way because, you know, for me, I'd always say bigger the crowd, bigger the show. You know what I mean? Like meaning that like when it's on the contest run or like, let's go, you could turn it up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so I think it's better to work, you know, I work better. My son's the same way. He plays football. You when you work under pressure better, it's like, okay, I could do my lines right now, but then if under pressure I choke, then it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know what I mean?
Yeah. That's with the acting and the lines and stuff, you have this, it's a gift that you have, but fearless. You of all fucking people, you're fearless. I'm way more of a puss than you are. But you are fearless, and you bring that into acting and into other hosting roles. That's what you have to be. It's fearless. Because if you're scared and you choke and you can't perform under that pressure of people watching you, people with microscopes and cameras and fucking listening and watching your face and listening to your words, and if you said them right, if you even pronounced them, you know, everything, that's pressure.
Yeah.
But that's fucking, that's cool. And if you can fucking kick ass in that type of setting, I think that you can kick ass in other parts of life and help, you know, overall the whole fucking thing.
Yeah. You know what? And you're the same way, bro. You know, I think we're a lot the same way when it comes to that pressure.
I just won't jump off of shit like you do and fucking, you know, go on a fucking bike and I'll fucking be like, oh my god, I'll hurt myself, and I'll just like convince myself that I hurt myself. But yes, in a lot of ways, other ways, I am fearless.
Absolutely.
I'm not scared. You know, I'm not scared to fuck up. I'm not scared to be in front of 50 fucking thousand people talking, you know, and on a microphone on the middle of this main stage. Like, it doesn't, I love that pressure. And that's what, you know, we live for. And when you can do kind of shit like that, that's fucking hard to do.
Yep.
And so, and I guess it just helps me in other areas of life as well. It gives you a nice confidence boost.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, you're absolutely confident and under pressure is a, you're awesome at it. You know, in front of like, you know, the festivals, you people, radio, everything that you do.
But I fuck up all the time.
But people are scared. But people are scared of that shit. A good friend of mine, back when we were doing Tony Hawk, we did a Boom Boom Huck Jam for a Super Bowl halftime show, and a celebrity was supposed to come out and I was supposed to introduce them, and they were super nervous because it was, they were out of their element. They wanted me to like kind of like coach with them along the way because there was 15,000 people around them, and it was a scary thing. So a lot of people, they can't walk into that. You walk in front of 100,000 fucking metalheads and they all love you from your show. So like, you're like the metal ambassador, you know? And it's like, you feed off of that pressure to shine. And I think that's what you did with acting. You were able to adjust that. You know what I mean? Like, all right, I'm not this character. Okay, what do I got to do? And you did it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I want to do more, dude. I fucking loved it. I know you've done a lot of acting and a lot of great experience. Like, that first day after I had all those lines in the interrogation rooms with all the run boys and stuff, and when I came back home, I mean, I got there at 11 o'clock or something like that, and I left around 8, 8:30, but I felt like I was only there for a few hours.
It's crazy, right?
It didn't feel like I was there all day. Yeah, no, I felt fucking great, and I came home, and I was all fucking, like, energized and fucking all amped up, and I just told my family, I was like, I fucking love that. That was a really good experience. I felt really comfortable. And despite the whole mess up in the beginning, I loved it. I loved the coaching. I loved the getting it right part, you know, because I remember the script guy that we have for Run Boys, a legendary dude that's worked with Miami Vice and MacGyver and Murder, She Wrote and all these other shows. And when he would come in and I would do my shit first, like rehearse it, he'd be like, your energy is too high, dude. He's like, you've got to come down. Slow and low. And then I would do a take, and he'd come in, he's like, you need to come down, Jose, you know? And then when he would explain it a little bit more to me, and I'd be like, okay. And then I would like fucking psych myself out, and then I would do it, take the coaching, and then he would come in and he'd be like, boom, he'd point right at me, he'd be like, that's it, like that, that's the way, that's what I'm talking about. And then, you know, that's a fucking good feeling, man.
Yeah.
And then to keep having those type of interactions throughout the day, I mean, it fucking was awesome. So I love it, man. I want to be in horror movies. I want to kill. I want to be killed. You know, I want to do all sorts of shit, man. I want to fucking smoke weed and fucking do a chick and then die, you know? You know,
awesome.
Like old school Friday the 13th style, you know what I mean?
Yeah, dude.
Like, mid-act, and then, you know, boom, there's a stake driven through both of us. Like, you know, I want shit like that to happen, man. So
it will, dude. It will. You can fucking talk about it. It'll happen, bro. I'm so stoked.
I know. That's why. Thank you, Rick, again, for seriously getting me involved, man.
Tapping into your acting, dude. You know what I could see you doing down the road, too, or even fucking right now if you have the time, because you're busy like me. Comedy, bro. You got so many stories, I bet, bro.
Man. I told you this briefly when we were talking about, because I know you do that a lot. And I just had done it once, and it was like 5 years ago in Long Beach. I opened up for Jim Florentine.
Sick.
It was at the Gaslight, I think. Yeah, and it was cool. Yeah, I had like 15 minutes, and when Jim asked me to do this, I was like, what do you mean, like host it? And he was like, no, you know, we already got a host. I just want you to go and talk and fucking tell some stories and some funny shit, because you know we're very close. And I said, man, what do you mean? I got nervous, and then I just like, wait a minute, I do this shit all the time on the radio. I love to tell stupid funny stories, so let me just tell some funny stories. And I just went up there, and it was really cool to make people laugh in front of you, because I do it on the radio, but I don't see anybody, you know, and I see reactions on social media, but, you know, only less than 1% of the audience will fucking social media you comments and stuff like that. So most people just listen and then, you know, think about what they think about in their head. And so doing it in front of the audience like that and telling funny, stupid stories, and just being a dork about it too, because I wasn't trying to be cool. It was fun. It you let your guard down, and it's really cool to get that reaction from people in front of you. And they didn't even know me. They didn't. Maybe a few of them did. Yes, I mean, because Jim's a big metal rock guy, but you know, it wasn't like it was a big room full of metalheads. It was just a comedy show.
Right.
So Yeah, but no, it's a lot of fun, man.
Dude, we should come up with this show for comedy with metal, bro. I mean, you know, I'm
they do that. Florentine and John Jameson are
they do that.
I feel like, yeah, Jim Brewer.
Yeah.
You know, they, you know, Brewer's always done his impressions of Ozzy and Lars. And,
that's true. That's true.
He does really good ones, James Hetfield and stuff, and he can do Sharon Osbourne. Yeah, those guys are fun. Yeah, I mean, dude, I would be down to do something like that again. You know, if it was like with friends and stuff, that would make sense for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. You just got the personality, and you got the history and the story, and I mean, just the number of people that respect you, that every, you know, from Metallica to every, you know, everybody, you know what I mean? So I'm sure you have a lot of cool stories and things you could share. Plus you have the personality. I learned something about you online. I didn't know this. You went to pharmacy school.
Yeah. Very proud of that, Rick. Very proud, dude.
So how many, yeah. Tell me about this.
Yeah, dude. You know, I was just outside smoking a joint. Let me go back.
and so, it's a perfect time for pharmacy school. You're smoking a joint.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's medicine for sure. Mm-hmm. So, okay, yeah, dude, I've been a metalhead since kindergarten, but when I was in high school, I grew up on the Mexican border, very poor. Everything was about drugs, and that's about it. And in our tiny little town, a few blocks from the fence, so I was a nerd, but I just let my nerd flag higher. And I just decided when I was a junior in high school that I wanted to be a doctor, a pharmacist,
right?
And so I that's what I knew, and I just worked towards that, you know, still being a crazy metalhead since I was in kindergarten. But I just, that was fun, that was just part of my life. But I had to get out of this town, and so I got a full ride academic scholarship to the University of Arizona. Chemistry major. That's where I started college radio when I was a freshman.
Wow.
And I just did that because it was fun. And it wasn't something that, it wasn't a career goal for me. You know, I mean, I just loved the shit out of metal, but it wasn't something that I thought I would make money at. So I did that for 4 years, and I went to graduate school in Tennessee, College of Pharmacy. And the Health Science Center was in Memphis. The main campus was in Knoxville. And I was at the school when Peyton Manning won the championship for football.
Awesome.
I was a volunteer in that year. So went out to Memphis, got a job at the big FM rock station, and I went to graduate school. I was the only fucking metalhead in my class of 100, and like only Mexican dude. And it was a really fucking awesome experience. And then I worked at this radio station. I started a metal show there on Saturday nights. And I was continuing to go to pharmacy school. And then I only made $6 an hour at that place. Again, it wasn't ever about money. I think that's what people get tripped up on when they're trying to do something. They try to make it all about money. And forever and ever, it wasn't about that, forever I was fucking just poor, you know, barely getting by, and you know, using credit and credit fucking cards and credit and all this shit. But anyways, but yeah, it wasn't about money. So in Memphis, I won an award for best metal DJ in the country in a trade magazine in 1999, and that's when I was in a year into pharmacy school. I had 3 years left to be a doctor. And I got a job offer after, you know, having all these contacts for years, being at a radio station in Tucson and then in Memphis. I had known a lot of people in the industry. And I got a job offer to work at TVT Records in 99. And I was like, shit, you know, I got 3 years of school. I don't know what to do. And I had a conversation with my dad, who's very much an older gentleman. He was 49 when I was born. So
wow.
When we talked, and he was very, 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 very smart. He had 6 kids prior to meeting my mom in Mexico, 2 with my mom, and then 6 with an American lady before. And
wow,
so, anyways,
so you got a big family.
Yeah, but those they're all much older. Like my half brothers are in their 60s, you know.
Oh yeah, 50s, okay,
like,
yeah,
and so and they had me when I decided to pursue music. They were like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Wait, hold on a second. Your phone.
My dad.
Yeah, go ahead. Wait, can you say that again?
Yeah. Well, my family got mad at me when I left pharmacy school to take the job at TBT, but my dad wasn't. My dad was the one that told me to never regret anything like this big of a decision. And he told me that if I did not do this, that I would regret this for the rest of my life. And I couldn't believe my dad was saying that because I'd worked so hard for school and pharmacy forever. And when my dad said that, that's when it just, for me, I was like, I'm fucking doing this. Wow. You know, I spent so many years working so hard in school and being a nerd that I just fucking did it. And I moved to Jersey City, worked at TBT Records in January of 2000. And I was there for a few months. I was the radio promotions guy for heavy metal to college radio stations like myself, people that programmed FM stations or you know, did metal shows. I was the guy that pushed the artists that we had on our label, like Seven Dust and Nothing Face and stuff like that. Ignite was on TBT at that time. And I got an email from Sirius, satellite radio, and it was the guy who was in charge of the alternative department. And this was the summer of 2000, and he was asking me to send him a bunch of CDs, like 50 CDs, because they were starting to build their channels. And I was like, what the fuck is Sirius?
Wow.
And then he told me, and then he showed me, and then he sent me a brochure in the mail, because it wasn't, emails were a thing, but it wasn't the same. This was 2000, and I don't know. I mean, we still got shit sent in the mail all the time. So I got this brochure, and I was reading it on the train from New York to Jersey, because I lived in Jersey, on the PATH train, and I was reading this brochure and all the science that went into this company, the money, the investments, the licenses from the government to use satellite space that was once war space, part of the Star Wars program, the real one, the government one. And so this was all, and then I read about the leadership and the executives there that came from Music Choice and other companies. And then I saw the channel lineup, and I went down quickly to rock. I looked for a heavy metal, boom, bam. I saw a 24/7 heavy metal channel. And then that's when I shit myself. I couldn't fucking believe that there was something that existed like that. And I said, I fucking have to be involved. So I
awesome.
Called this dude back. I said, I'll send you anything you want. Just give me the rock dude's email address. And he did. And I sent this dude, at the time, he was the main guy for rock at Sirius. And I sent him this long-ass email on how I live, shit, and breathe metal. And he loved it. I invited him to a concert. He came.
Right.
He met. He saw that I wasn't a psychotic maniac in real life. And he invited me to the studios, and I came up to the brand new headquarters on 49th and 6th Avenue across
right.
the street from Radio City Music Hall. And I was tripping out on the 36th floor looking down and on the street. And I saw that the head of programming, this Italian lady, was walking down the hallway. And I had memorized the brochure, so I knew who she was. And I went up to her and I said, "Hey, what's up, Maria? I'm Jose Mangan. Nice to meet you." And then she said, "Who are you? How do you know me?" And I said, "I memorized the brochure." And then she started laughing, and she was so cool to me. We started talking, and she asked me what I was there for, and I said, "I don't know, but I'm a fucking metal guy, and I'm perfect for this channel. I need to be a part of it." And she loved me. And as soon as I met her second in charge, and then I met the guy that I was supposed to meet, they all fucking loved me. And 2 weeks later, they offered me a job, more than double what I was making, which was nothing at TVT, but they offered me money and the opportunity to build the rock department at Sirius Satellite Radio. So I started in September of 2000 at Sirius.
Wow.
So that's how that happened, man.
That went quick, though, because you're from 99 to 2000 in 1 year, right? It's like boom, boom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've been in college since 95. And
well, I'm saying when you went to do for that, what was it, a different record
TDT.
Label? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I worked for a record label. No, it was only 6 months when
Got
I moved
it.
To New York in January, and in September, you know, I was only at TBT for 6 months, and then I went to Sirius, or like I was like, yeah, say, okay, technically 8 months.
Right.
8 months. I ended at the end of August, and then I started at the beginning of September at Sirius. So, yeah, man, it's but again, this is not because I tried to get this position. It was, I mean, I did try once I knew about the company, but like, I'm just saying in life, like if it wasn't for my schooling, if it wasn't for me pursuing education and really fucking applying myself, and doing fucking awesome in school and proving professors and everybody wrong, because I had long hair and fucking tattoos and I was a fucking metalhead and a big stoner, huge stoner. And, you know, yeah, right, whatever. And I was like, fuck you, watch. And then boom. So, but I tell students and young kids and people that want to, you know, ask me all the time, how did you get this job? How did you do? How? What do you? What did you major in? Communications, radio broadcast, and it's like no, chemistry. So it's like that's beautiful. I think, man, that you can really, you know, that education can take you into places you never even fucking knew. You know, so that's what I encourage people: go to college, go somewhere, move out of state, have these experiences that can help you to get to where you don't even know where you're going to go.
Absolutely.
Sometimes. And so, but if it wasn't for that, Rick, if it wasn't for me going to Tennessee, of all places, I could have went to school in Arizona, in Colorado. I applied in Tennessee as well. So those are the three colleges I applied to because they were great pharmacy schools. But, you know, just imagine like the path that would have been so different if that shit just didn't happen. You know, so, and again, it wasn't about money. And even at Sirius, I mean, living in New York City and all that, and Jersey and stuff. And then I met my wife. We've been married for 20 years. And you know, she was expensive back in the day. But, you know, it wasn't about money. You know, it was just about, I'm just so happy that I fucking have this job. And then eventually, all these years later, then it starts to pay off. But you're in it. You got to be in it for the long haul, and that's what it was for me, man. It wasn't about how can I capitalize on being metal and money and all this stuff. And I don't even have merch for sale. I'm
right.
Fucking 25 years into radio, and that's stupid and that's dumb. I should fucking have stuff, and
you
I am
should,
actually
bro.
Gonna. I am this year. I am, but I haven't. So for me, again, it's not. I'm not trying, I'm just like, I can't believe what I get to do. It's a dream, fucking crazy ass dream. So I'm happy just with that, you know?
Yeah.
Which is really kind of pure and beautiful.
Well, you know, I always say this, dude, if you're not like happy now, like none of it matters. Like, in other words, like,
yeah.
you know, that life's a crazy balance. You know, you got to plan for your future, but you don't forget about the moment. And if you're not enjoying the moment and you're always focused about just the money, then you know what I mean? Some people say, well, money makes you happy. Well, no, I like money. Don't get me wrong. I have nothing against money. I love money. But the thing is I also like, I like having fun and enjoying now. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So
yeah, that's
what it's
life
about.
Life is short, dude. Life is short, man. You never know. And we see a lot of people, friends and family, and then you see idols and musicians passing before their time. And man, you know, life is short, man. I'm grateful of what I get to do and how I get to help bands and fans and make people feel better. Because I could be a dick on the radio. I can have some sort of shtick or something, and I'm this guy, this character. But I'd rather, you know, fill the airwaves with positivity and love and gratitude, thanks appreciation.
Yeah.
You know, passion. I think that that doesn't move the needle, but it moves the needle more consistently over time, you know, because I could choose to be a villain, you know, like I've had friends, musicians who were normal sort of, and then they became villains because of political things and their stances and their crazy, crazy beliefs. And they're trying, they found that side grows faster because you do, you get more followers, you get more attention. And when you're negative but I'm gonna fucking kill him with kindness and come positive all the time and try to make people feel good, because man, there's so much stress in the world, Rick. And when they listen to their stations on Sirius XM that I'm on, I want them to feel good, man.
Right.
To give them a minute of a pep talk, you know, and you got this, and we got some adrenaline in the form of this sick music for you, and warm shed up for people that are cold, you know, because metal does that. It heats up your insides in a good way. So, yeah, man. So I hear that from fans a lot, is how, I mean, they're thankful that I'm always, you know, positive and trying to lift them up. And that's the way to do it, man. But again, yeah, you know, that's I'm looking at it long term. I'm not in it for the short term.
Well, I also think that that's just who you are. You know what I mean? Like some people, yeah, people are all born the way they're born, or people change, you know, they can change or not. I'm saying, you know, or change a little bit, or, you know, or, and I mean that in a positive way, as I'm saying is, yeah, I could relate to that because, you know, positivity, it's a lot, lasts a lot longer than negativity. You know, no, you can't go through life. Yeah. There's too much of this negative stuff in this world, you know, obviously through different sources, mm-hmm, of media and stuff. And it's refreshing that someone could go listen to metal. I mean, because remember back in the day, metal was like, metal's bad. You know, when it first came out, you know?
Yeah, of course.
Like,
yeah,
like,
it is.
Like, it's satanic.
People still have that perception. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
People still think we're scary. You know, some people think that metal is, oh, that's aggressive, and everyone's just a fucking aggressive person that wants to fight and all this. And, you know, in fact, it's the opposite. We're teddy bears. You know, yes, we have that adrenaline, but I think a lot of them, the majority of metalheads, you know, because the music is so intense, and if they're really, really into the music and listen to it a lot, I think it soothes us, and it's more of a comforting thing, and metal is a relaxing thing for me. It soothes my heart, and it makes me feel good, and that relaxes me. And so I think that we're teddy bears. If you meet so many metalheads across, we're all just, we work hard, we love our music hard, and, you know, and but we're at the same time, we get a lot of the that aggression out in listening to the music with this audio sense and not physically hitting somebody. So when people really get to know metalheads, especially when they get to know me, they're like, oh, man, you guys are really friendly and really nice. I'm like, of course we are. You know, but you hear that as well from people that work in the business side of things when they're dealing with other genres of music and those artists and fans, and then you're dealing with our artists and our fans. There's a big difference.
You know,
we're kinder. We're cooler. You know, we're the people that everybody wants to be. Rock stars, you know? That's why that's the word rock star. But you other genres, they're not that way. And it's not that same community vibe, multi-generational passion, knowledge for the genre itself, you know, passing this on to your kids and stuff. That's important for metalheads. You know, that's not important for fans of EDM. You know, they're not, you know, fucking raising their kids on it and encouraging them to be, it's not the same
right
thing.
Right,
it's
for
a,
sure,
it's a lifestyle with heavy metal. You're raising your kids with this music, you know, and I've raised my kids with this stuff, so it's a lifestyle. It's not just a, oh, I like this when I'm in the car, you know.
No, right,
this is, you get it tattooed on you. You name your son after your favorite guitar player. You name your dog after your favorite guitar player. Like, all these different things, that's what you do, man. And that's why metal is so beautiful.
You know, I never looked at it like that.
Yeah.
No, I mean, not. But, I never didn't look at it in a bad way. I just never thought of it like, because I know like punk rock is like, because I could say that about punk rock, you know? I'd be like, yeah.
Well, punk rock, like, I could see you guys are a little more fucking crazy, though. You guys are a little more.
Well, it depends. Wait, it depends. Depends on the generation. It depends on when you were born, okay? Like, the.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Nowadays, like, you know, pop punk, that's a whole other story, but when pop punk took over, you know, that's like, things changed to where actually, you know, it's chill. But what I mean is lifestyles, like your dress code and how you go out each day and how you design, or, you know, I'm thinking like from a bike perspective, you design your bike a certain way, or you write something on your bike, or you just create. It's about being creative, really, at the end of the day, whether it's punk rock or metal, or, you know, it's about creating. But you said something earlier that I want to talk about. You got into metal when you were in kindergarten?
Yeah, dude.
What was the band? What was your first metal band that you heard that you were like, dude?
So easy, and it's when I was just writing about them right now, right before this interview and hang started. Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil.
There you go.
That was my very first tape. My cousins were older than me, like 5, 6, 7, 8 years, 9 years older than me. And so when I was a little kid, my parents didn't listen to music. My mom barely spoke any English. My dad was just worked and, you know, tried to make ends meet for the family. But we weren't a music family like that. My cousins were. And my cousins were into Motley Crue and Iron Maiden and Van Halen and Ozzy and Judas Priest and all these amazing bands. I would go to their home and their back a shack and see all the posters and the black light posters and the Hot Leaf and the
awesome.
and the chicks and Daisy Dukes and bikinis and naked chicks and the posters in the garage. And
wait, how old were they?
My cousins were like, I mean, I was 4, 3, 5, you know, and they were like 15, 14.
So I'm the same age. You're saying all this stuff to me and I'm like, your cousins had to be born the same time I was, because I'm relating to everything you're saying. Like, yeah, the black light, the fucking Daisy Dukes.
late 60s, early 70s.
There you go.
That's when my cousins were born.
Yep.
And I was born in 77. So, but I just, that was just so cool to me. And they had black shirts and their leather jackets and their motorcycles and their fucking denim and long hair. They fucking just look cool. And I wanted to be that. And so when I was able to, the day after Christmas, when I was in kindergarten, my grandma gave me $20. And I had my dad take me to Kmart. And I went to the tape section and I got Motley Crue's Shout at the Devil.
Sick.
I came back, listened to that tape over and over and over again, like a cult seance. And then the next week I had like $8 or something left, and my dad gave me a few more dollars, and I was able to buy Rat out of the cellar, so on tape. So those two cassettes I probably had for 6 months or so, and I just, that's it. Those two tapes were what fueled my life and made
so
me
rad.
Want to be a metalhead, and I've never strayed from metal. I mean, I was into Bon Jovi and Poison, but at that point, that was kind of metal sort of too, in a way. But Def Leppard, you know. But I never strayed from that music, and I loved it so much.
Awesome.
And I idolized these people, and I loved them, and I studied it, and got the magazines, and studied and recorded Headbangers Ball on MTV, and I just would fucking learn about bands and. Watch the videos and then go buy the tapes and tell my friends about it. I mean, that went on forever, man. And I started playing guitar in the fifth grade, and I was just a fucking metalhead, man. A metalhead.
Did you ever meet, this is a stupid question, you're probably going to be like, duh, yeah, dude. But you've probably interviewed Motley Crue, right? Or do you know those guys?
Yes, I have. Yeah, I don't know them too well, but I have done stuff with them. I've met all of them. Just a few words with Mick and Vince, but I've done stuff with Nikki and Tommy over the years. And yeah, super cool guys. Like, you know, I've told them you know, how I feel, but I don't know right now if they would know how much they're, what they mean to me, but
yeah,
I fucking love them, but see, we don't play them on the, on my channel, so it wasn't like,
I get it.
I do a lot, but when Nikki Sixx was in 6 a.m., that was a band that we played on Octane, so, you know, I did stuff with him then. Tommy Lee was in Methods of Mayhem,
yep.
You know, and then he had his book as well, stuff that we featured on the channels and talked about it. I was in charge of Ozzy's Boneyard for a while, so we did some stuff with Nikki there as well. So, yeah, man, but, yeah, I don't really know them that well. I mean, my favorite part about my job is my idols becoming my friends.
Yeah.
And that is the greatest gift of my life, man, when, you know, these dudes that I worshipped so much my whole life, I could never imagine being friends with them. It didn't even cross my mind. I just was more of always a fan.
Yeah.
And the fact that these guys are friends, like Jonathan from Korn is going to draw the Korn logo on my leg, and I'm going to get it tattooed. He's the guy that originally designed. Yeah, he designed that Korn logo back in the day, and he's going to draw it on my leg, and I'm going to get it tattooed.
I interviewed those guys for ESPN in the early days, and I said, did you guys ever think about calling your band Cream of Korn? And they were like, dude, you're an idiot. I go, what about Korn on the Cob? Korn on the Cob, you ever think of that one? They're like, dude, shut up. No, I love the band. I'm just joking. I love the band. I was just trying to be, you know, funny guy, but it didn't work.
It's so fun. I actually, when Korn first came out, I started to eat more Korn and Cream Korn and Korn on the Cob.
Yeah.
I wore Adidas. Like, I love those guys so much. And, you know, Max Cavaletta from Sepultura and Soulfly, and, you know, Dave Mustaine and Tom Mariah from Slayer and Chuck Billy Testament, the guys from Anthrax. Like, I can't believe that these dudes are friends. And, you know, Dino, Fear Factory, like these guys that when I was a kid, I was like, oh man, I fucking love them. And yeah, it's really cool. James and Kirk and Robert, Metallica, man, like I can't believe it, dude. So that has been the greatest gift. But it's in the beginning, Rick, it was a little, you know, I think these bands were like, who is this fucking guy?
Yeah.
You know, I was excited. I was energetic. I was, you know, probably a little more amped up, you know, and talking to these bands, my idols. And, you know, but it was consistency. You know, the next time they came up, I was just as excited. They were like, okay, this is how he is.
Yeah, exactly.
This is him. But I remember Slayer when I first met them. They were kind of like, whoa. Like, and Dave Mustaine, too. Like, whoa. Like, you're a lot, dude. And then, again, the next time, they were just like, okay, I like this. And it was genuine, and they can see that. And I was just very respectful and reverent and loving to them and their new music, which is what they want to promote, right? I'm a fan of these guys and I love them, but they're there to promote something,
right?
You know, but after 21 years of doing stuff with these guys, you know, now it's a different level. Now it's like family, and they come over and we do stuff together. Like,
Earned your wings, bro. Hey, check this out. I got a Motley Crue story I got to tell you real quick. In art class,
yeah,
we had a substitute, and that's back when we had like overhead projectors, and they needed someone to turn the projector. It wasn't like a remote control, so you had to like do this, like it was all like manual. And so so this teacher's like, hey man, you know, who wants to do the overhead projector? And I was like, it's medieval times. I put the cassette in of Shot at the Devil, and I'm telling you, dude, it just worked perfect. It just struck. I thought of this when I was talking to you, so I got to say it. So I'm in control of the overhead projector and the music. And so they turn off the lights, and it's like, in the beginning, God created evil over all mankind. And I went, my homies knew what I was doing. I'm like, boop. And I turned the mic. And then I went all into the part. He does a speech to like, so be sung and shout at the devil, jern, 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 and all my friends in the back. Oh man, we got suspended or like got a Saturday detention. It was awesome, but it worked perfect.
Wow, that's such a great intro for something like that too. So that's a good song to play, man. That's a scary one to play too.
I mean, but she didn't know, and a lot of people like that was back. I was in high school, so like, you know, we were the punkers. People didn't like us, anyways. Blah blah blah. But it's the fact that like people weren't into metal neither. Very small, like little more, you know, people. So no one really knew Motley Crue. They didn't even know the intro. So the whole class is going along with it. It was awesome. Anyways. I just want to say that.
That's so cool. I love that intro, man. It's still a fucking scary intro. If you were to put that shit on right now, people would freak out.
Yeah. No, they're badass, dude. They fucking kill
me. Yeah, I love it.
Well, listen, dude. It's been great talking to you. I'm stoked on everything. Can you plug your show, like when people could see your show and where to go?
Yeah. I am on Sirius XM, Liquid Metal. Monday through Friday, our time in California from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. And then I am on Octane Monday through Friday from 6 p.m. Okay, wait. No, I fucked that up. Sorry. 8 a.m. I was mixed up the East Coast and the West Coast time. So, okay, California time. I'm on from 8 to 2 p.m. on Liquid Metal. And then from 3 to 9 p.m. on Octane, Channel 37. And I'm on all the time. Social media is a really good way to look at all the cool shit that I do.
And what is your Instagram so people could follow you?
Just my name, at Jose Mangan. And I'm on Instagram and Twitter. Those are my weapons of choice. I use those a lot. And yeah, man, but I, you know, got a lot of stuff going on and keeping busy and keeping positive and yeah, man, it's really been an awesome hang with you, Rick. I can't wait to see you when we do that party scene. I know you guys are going to be involved in it. I'm going to go out there and hang.
Yeah,
the Run Boys. But thanks again for getting me involved with that too, Rick. I appreciate it.
Oh, dude, much love. And anyone out there listening, be on the lookout for Run Boys. Definitely listen to Jose's show. You're a badass dude. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me.
Of course, Rick. Anytime, brother.
All right, stay rad. Have a great day.
All right, thanks, Rick. See you later.
See you, bro. Hey, yo, you there?